We're holding on your Chesamid days. We're going to start the third parak now. Mishnah says, Seder Tanias Elo Va'omer. This order of Tanias we said at the end of the first parak and throughout all the second parak, that you start out with the Yechidim. That the Yechidim fast, the individuals, the Tamar Chachamim, later on they have three fasts, and three more severe ones, and seven after that. All of that is Birvir Rishona. It was all when the time of the first rain passed. We talked about in the first parak when that is, sometime in Cheshvan generally, and the rain didn't come yet, then that's when you go through this, you're gradually escalating what you're doing. Because it's a serious thing that there's no rain, but after all, it's not so unusual. Okay, sometimes the rain is late. So therefore you can gradually escalate like that. You don't all of a sudden, to begin with. Yeah, you can start off with the Yechidim fast, and later on you have the Tzibur fast, three very lenient fasts, etc. Avot Tzmachim Sheshinu, but if you have a case where they planted and the plants came up differently than they usually do. What does that mean? Rashi says, for example, they planted wheat, and instead of wheat, there came up thorns. That would be a problem. Second explanation, Rashi says, although Hagar Tzabach takes out these words, is that you have, for example, there's growing wheat, but there's no kernels in the ears of grain. So you have the stalk is growing over there. You got all the straw and everything, but it's empty. Yeah, or any other change like that. We'll talk about in the Gemara the possibility whether it also includes a case where the wheat or whatever it is drying out on the stalk. Anyway, so that kind of thing, Masri and Alei and Miyah, they immediately start crying out for that. We talked about previously what Matrian means, whether it means to blow shofar, whether it means to say Anenu, whether maybe it means both, and also whether it includes fasting. The point is, in other words, we immediately go to do something because that's a serious thing.
Can we go to seven?
That for Rashi, not necessarily seven, but Masri and Alei and Miyad means that immediately, like this, normally the truest, the Anenu, the blowing shofar, whatever, would only be in the last seven. Here we start doing it right away. Maybe we only do three fasts, but we do them with all the severity of the normal seven fasts. Because this is a serious situation. This is not something normal. V'chein, and so also in another case, Shepasku Kshamim Ben Geshem L'Geshem Abayim Yom, if the rain stopped between one rainfall and another, there was 40 days or more break. Usually you have, again, it starts raining in Eretz Yisrael in Cheshvan time, usually. It rains off and on throughout the winter. And then you have Nissan time as Malkosh, the last rain of the season, which helps fill out the grain, and that's that. Here you have, for example, it rained normally in Cheshvan, let's say, and then 40 days, which is almost 6 weeks, pass, and there has not been another rainfall. So that's already a more serious thing. That's already an unusual...
Does that mean Masri?
Right. That's what we do, yeah. Masri in LA, and we blow shofar, we cry out for that. Because that already is a plague that's going to lead to a drought.
Plants are just in a way similar to humans, that they need a flow of the things that they need, and they can't just go a while.
Yeah, exactly. It's one thing if they haven't started growing yet, exactly. Let's say you planted the seeds, and let's say there hasn't come any rain yet. Okay, you know, eventually there needs to be rain for them to grow, but as long as you don't, you know, they'll sit there in the ground waiting until rain comes. Like this, they started like this. The rain came, they started growing, and now there's no rain for 40 days. They're going to dry up. So that's a more serious thing. Continues the Mishnah. Other cases where you have to declare fast. Suppose that rain came down, which is good for the plants, but not good for the trees. We'll talk about in the Gemara what that means, but it means, for example, like a light rain, which is it waters the plants very nicely, but it doesn't do much for the trees, because for the trees it needs to penetrate deeper into the ground. Or if there was a kind of rain that's good for the trees, but not for the plants. Yeah, we had in the first parak, yeah, some a little bit about that, yeah. Or third case, you had rain that's good for the plants and good for the trees, but not enough to fill up the various kinds of water pits and cisterns and whatnot. All of those, Masrin, Alei, and Miyad, those also you right away start blowing shofar and crying out for. And so it also is with a city, if you have a city where no rain fell on it at all. So you have surrounding areas, rain is falling, but that particular city, none fell. And we that's a problem, as we see in a pasuk. We had this in the first parak as well. V'imtarti al ir achas, the Eibishter says as a warning, I'll make it rain on one city, v'al ir achas loyam here, and I won't make it rain on another city. Chok achas timot, one section of land will be watered, and the other one will dry out. And actually, we learned in the first parak, and we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow as well, that both halves of the pasuk are talking about it's a problem. The one that doesn't get rain is going to have a drought. The ones that are getting rain are getting too much rain, and it's damaging the crops. So therefore,
you have this case, let's say a leaf, so right away my quick in other words, it's raining right now. They're going to go out and pray for rain.
For a different kind of rain, right. Because it's helping the trees, but it's damaging the crops. It's a heavy rain of the kind that's washing away the crops, yeah. Yeah.
Hurricane.
So we'll talk about in the Gemara the various possibilities, what there could be as far as different kinds of rain, yeah. So here you have again a case where one city is not getting rain and the cities around it are getting rain and maybe they're getting too much rain actually. So therefore, Oisa Ir Misano Masraf, that particular city fasts and blows shofar. In other words, they do the severe fast right away.
The one that's not having rain.
And all the cities around it, Misano Tvoloi Masrias, they fast but they don't blow shofar. They fast like more lenient fasts. Well, so Rashi says that. So some of the Farshim say, yeah, that's kind of they're joining in with the tzara of this one city is having a tzara, so everybody surrounding it, all the cities in that general area are joining in with them in the tzara. Rashi says a different reason, because what's going to happen? The people of that city, because they're not having rain, they don't have, and none of their crops are going to grow. They're going to have to go to the surrounding cities to buy, which means that those cities are going to end up having shortages as well. You're going to have you have the same number of people trying to live off a smaller amount of food, so there's going to be shortages there. Yeah. So therefore, so the other cities fast, but they don't have to blow shofar. They don't have to do the most severe fast. That's also true, right? Yeah. Rabbi Akiva, I mean, the other way around. Masrius v'lo misanis. Rabbi Akiva says the other cities around it should blow shofar or cry or say anenu, whatever, but they don't have to fast. Basically, you have to do one or the other. But which one do they have to do? Which one is the proper one? The Yerushalmi mentioned the Ran quotes from a Yerushalmi that the Chamim and Rabbi Akiva are both saying, well, okay, since the disaster is not affecting those cities themselves directly, it's more of an indirect thing. So fine, we can't compare it to the regular tainis for rain. Rather, we have to compare it to something else. We have to compare it basically to a time when you're doing tshuva. So what do you have? So the Tanakhama says, okay, Rosh Hashanah time, you're doing shuvah, you blow shofar, you don't fast. Or the other way around, you fast. Rather, Rabbi Akiva is saying, you compare it to Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, you blow shofar, you don't fast. Same thing over here. The cities around over here, they should treat it like Rosh Hashanah.
Blow
and not fast. Whereas the Tanakhama says the other way around, compare it to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, you fast, but you don't blow shofar. Same thing over here. That's what they should be doing. The same thing when you have a city where there's a plague, a pestilence that's killing people, or mapolis, where buildings are falling down. Rashi says they're falling down because of the wind. So there's a hurricane, for example, that's knocking a hurricane or a tornado or whatever that's knocking down buildings. Some of them are say it might be an earthquake. Yeah. So again, Oisa Ir Misano Masraf, that particular city has to fast and blow shofar. And all the surrounding cities fast, but they don't blow shofar. And again, the same machlokas, Rabbi Akiva, and Masrius, v'lo misanis. Rabbi Akiva says that instead they blow shofar, they don't have to fast. Ezehu dever. Now, what's considered, at what point do we consider it a dever? I mean, in an average sized city, you're always going to have people dying. So when do we say that it's something unusual where you have to be fasting and then blowing shofar and davening for?
Dever.
Dever literally is like Makkah dever, the fifth of the Makkah. So it means a pestilence. Yeah. One of the Mepharshim, I don't remember who, makes a distinction between Dever and Magefa. And he says that basically Dever is where they die without an obvious cause, and Magefa is where they have some kind of infection, like blood poisoning or something. I don't remember, actually. Ir Hametziah Chamesh Meis Ragli. Suppose you have a city where 500 people, where you have 500 people who go out of the city, which means It doesn't mean the population of the city is 500. The Rambam, in fact, writes that this specifically means, we'll talk about it more in the Gemara in a couple of days, but it means there's 500 able-bodied citizens in the city. So we exclude that we exclude old people, we exclude children, we exclude women. We say it has an able-bodied population, the kind of go out, like to work, or some before Hashem say go out, like to battle, 500 people, 500 healthy, strong men who would not normally be expected to die. And then out of the city, there are three people, there are three dead bodies that come out of it, three dead people, one on 3 days, one after the other. So one person dies one day, another the second day, and a third the third day. We'll talk about in the Gemara what about if it happens closer, what about if it happens all three on one day, for example. We'll get into a machlokas about that. Right. Then how is a dever? Then it's considered dever. Pachas mikan ain't a dever. If it's any less than that, so you have one person died one day and another person died 2 days later, let's say, or another person dies the second day, and then that's it. That's not considered dever. That's just, you know, it's normal. There's a normal death rate in the city. Whether it's one after the other, 3 days succession. And the Gemara is going to talk about we prorate. The mission is giving an example of a city with 500 able-bodied citizens. But the same thing would apply, let's say the city is three times as big, let's say it's 1,500 people. Then you need three people dying every day of 3 days in succession for it to be deadly. So
you more like a market for another day.
And that's, the more people there are, the more the death rate has to be a certain percentage for it to be considered a deadly. Otherwise it's just normal things.
But this would also include healthy women are dying causes too.
Ah, so yeah, Mepharshim talk about that, right? Why the Rambam is excluding women? I mean, women, you can argue, you know, there's more danger to them. There's pregnancy, there's childbirth, or whatever.
They're excluding those things.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but that's if a 90-year-old person dies, then obviously you're not so worried about that being dever. That's normal for a 90-year-old to die. Mashenkin, you have a healthy 20 or 30 or 40-year-old man who dies. And
you're talking about, you're saying three out of those 500, but what age they are, were they sick before?
Oh, so that's the thing, actually. Some Mepharshim say that actually we're saying the city has to have 500 able-bodied men. The three dead people don't necessarily have to be from among those 500. It's true. The three dead people could be, for example, like you said, women, or maybe old people who weren't previously sick, whatever, yeah. No, but it's not necessarily the same. The numerator and the denominator aren't necessarily from the same group. The denominator is the 500 able-bodied men. The numerator, the dead people, is not necessarily out of that 500. Yeah, that's the thing.
People in the town.
Then you need a larger number for it to be a dever, yeah. Continue the Mishnah. Al elu masriin b'chol makam. About the following things, they blow shofar, or they cry out in every place. Meaning, even if you hear that so Rashi says, when we say every place, means even if it's at the other end of the world. Rashi gives the example, you hear of one of these following things, the Mishnah is going to mention, that's happening in Spain. You and Bavel, which, you know, in those days would be like a year apart, still have to cry out and blow shofar and whatever for it, because these are things that could travel from one place to another. Other Mepharshim say it doesn't necessarily mean to that degree, it just means like all within the same country.
Travel.
Yeah. What are these things?
Half of the Jews,
yeah. Well, maybe not necessarily, actually. You know what the Gemara is going to talk about, for example, I think we're going to have on Daf Chafala for Chavei, something like that. We're going to have a case about there was a plague involving pigs.
Yeah.
Where one of the Amoraim declared a fast. Rabbi Yehuda, I think it was Rabbi Nachman, whatever, whoever it was anyway, because there's a special reason, because pigs and then people have very similar digestive systems. It's the reason why nowadays flu viruses easily jump from one to the other, but still, you know, obviously that doesn't involve Jews, per se. But yeah. So the following things that the Mishnah is going to list, if you hear about them in one place, again, according to Rashi, even if you hear about them on the other side of the world, and according to some other Mepharshim, just if you hear about them someplace else in the same country. They are ala shidofen, for blight, which is a kind of disease that attacks the crops and makes them mildew. V'ala yerokon. Yerokon, there's two different explanations. Rashi says over here it means choli. It means a sickness. Yerokon comes from the word yorok, which means green. So it's a sickness that turns people's faces green or yellowish, jaundice, basically. the Bar Tanura brings another explanation that Yerokin is another disease of crops. It's one that makes them actually Shidofen. No, Shidofen. Sorry, I said that Shidofen was mildew. No, that's Yerokin. According to that explanation, would be mildew. Shidofen is an east wind that dries out the crops and makes them bang against each other and all the seeds fall out. Yeah. Yeah, Rashi in a few places relates the word shidofen to no, that's shtifon kadim. But shidofen is kadim. By the way, in Paris Dream, where he sees the seven skinny ears of grain, Rashi explains that the Targum translates the word shidofen is kadim, which is from the same tradition as our word shidofen, as shtifon, and Rashi explains that shtifon in turn is related to the word mashkei. A mashkei is the lintel of a door; the door is always banging against it. So the same thing, shtifon means where the kernel, the stalks of grain are banging against each other from the because they've been dried out by the heat. And then yeah. So that's shidofen. That's shidofen. So that's the same. Yeah. Shidofen is the word in the Torah. Shidofen is kadim. The Targum translated it as shkifon. So shidofen then is this blight. Yerokin is either jaundice of people or mildew of the grain. Vala arba. Valachosil, those are two different kinds of grasshoppers. Arba is a kind that comes in very large quantities, hence the name. Well, they're both different kinds of locusts, but there's many different kinds. We're going to talk about on Amud Beis some more different kinds of them. But there's different kinds of locusts. Arba is a problem because there's so many of them. Each individual arba may not eat that much, but you have 10 zillion of them, then everything's going to be gone. Chosil is a different kind where maybe it doesn't come in such large quantities, but chosil is Meloshin Yaksalenu, it eats up everything. So therefore, either of those is a problem. Balachayra, or because of wild animals, which are invading the cities. Balacherev, or because of the sword, because of soldiers, armies that are traveling from one place to another, where they're gonna kill and destroy and do pogroms and whatnot. Masrin aleh, all those things they blow shofar and daven to the Eibishter about. Mepneshi makam alechas, because all those things are a plague that travels from one place to another. So even to go with Rashi, then even you hear about a locust infestation, let's say in Spain, you and Bob will have to fast because it can get all the way to you. And the same thing with all these other things. Yeah, so therefore, anywhere you are, then according to Rashi, you'd have to, when you hear about it.
They had 2 years ago a locust plague that went from Egypt directly to Israel.
Okay, but Egypt and Israel are next to each other. That's not a big city.
It's 500 or 600 miles.
Okay.
I don't think I remember hearing that it affected Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Continues the Mishnah. Maisa sheyodus kenim Yerushalayim la'oreim. It one time happened that the elders, the members of the Sanhedrin, left Yerushalayim to go to their individual cities all over Eretz Yisrael. The gozru tainis, and they declared a tainis in their various cities. On the fact that there had been seen in Ashkelon a shidofen, this hot east wind that destroyed the crops, that destroyed an amount of wheat that you could use to fill up an oven. We'll talk about in the Gemara exactly how much that was. But it was a very small quantity, but already they declared a fast on it because it could spread. It's a contagious thing, and it could end. Sort of, I don't know. For oid bazur tainis, and also another time the Chachamim declared a tainis. Al sha'ochlu, ze'evim shnei tinokus be'evar ha'yarden, because wolves had eaten two children in Evar ha'yarden. There were Jews living in Evar ha'yarden in those days. This is talking about in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, or afterwards. Well, B'nai Gadim and Nairoven is before that, but we're talking even in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, there were a substantial number of Jews who lived in some of the cities in Evar ha'yarden. So here, wolves had eaten two children, so they declared a fast about that. Rabbi Yossi says they didn't make the fast because they actually ate the children, but just because they were seen in populated areas. Usually wolves stay out of populated areas. Here, where all of a sudden they're invading the cities, and then that itself is a problem. It means they've lost their fear of people. So the Gemara is going to talk about it mishulachas. That like it's a plague sent min hashemayim, that the wild animals are losing their fear of people.
Have they really? Should this have been worked first as opposed to our judgment?
maybe it happened. The Shidofen one was first, and later on, the Zavim one happened. And before Shem talk about is Rabbi Yossi arguing on the need for the fast, that according to him, you need to declare it only, that it's actually a machlokas, that Rabbi Yossi is saying you need to declare a fast even if you only see wolves, and the Tanakhama is saying only if they actually are eating people, or is it they're not really arguing about that? Rabbi Yossi is just telling the fact. That the you Tanakhama are saying they actually ate the children. The fact is that they didn't actually eat them. They were just seen. But according to the Tanakhama, even the fact that they were seen might indeed be enough reason to declare a fast.
And wolves and
bears. What?
Wolves, bears, and bears.
Okay.
Because they came to the prophet.
Okay. Yeah. Continues the Mishnah, Al Eilu Masriyin B'Shabbos, about the following things that it's going to list, we Masriyin on Shabbos. Now, we learned in the first parak, usually up until now in the Mishnah, we've been assuming that Masriyin can either mean blowing shofar, or it can mean saying Anenu, not the Anenu that we say in Shemana Esra on fast days, but the one that we say in Slichot, Anenu, Anenu Hashem Anenu. Here, where we're talking about Shabbos, it has to mean that, because you can't blow shofar on Shabbos. But so the following things, Masri and Bashabas, Al Irshe Kifur Nochrim, about a city that was surrounded, that's besieged by Goyim, or Nahor, or a city that's threatened by a river that's gonna flood. Valasvina Hamiterefis Bayam, or about a ship that's being tossed around in the ocean that's gonna sink. Rabbi Yossi says, when it comes to you saying Masri and Bashabas, it depends. La Ezra Veloy Litzaka, you're allowed to cry out, and maybe even according to him, blow a shofar, when it helps save the people. If you're sounding the alarm so people can come and help save the city that's threatened or the ship or whatever, then that you're allowed to do on Shabbos. But not Litzaka, not if it's just in order to cry to Davin, to the Eibishter, that they should be saved, because who says that our tefillahs are going to be so effective that we should be saying Anenu on Shabbos, that we should be saying Anenu Hashem Anenu on Shabbos, which we don't normally do. Usually we don't say those kinds of tefillahs on Shabbos. That was how Rashi. It's not Bederach HaTeva you're going to save them by saying Anenu. It's L'mayla Bederach HaTeva. So you can't disrespect Shabbos for that reason.
Was it the case on Shabbos that you would be able to?
So Rabbi Yossi is saying, if you're calling out, if you're crying out in public to say, everybody come help, let's go save the city or the ship or whatever, that you're allowed to do. But if it's just you're going to be crying out on Shabbos to daven to the Eibishter to save the people, that don't do on Shabbos. That was Rashi's first explanation in the first parak when we had this. Rashi's second explanation there was that Rabbi Yossi is saying you're allowed to even say Anenu for them in private, just not in public, not in the sibur in shul on Shabbos, because that wouldn't be in keeping with covered Shabbos. But to do it in privately, that you could do. Shimon HaTimni Omer Afal HaDever. Shimon HaTimni says that you can also Masriyin on Shabbos also for Dever, also with an epidemic, like we talked about before. But the Chachamim did not agree with him on that. You Masriyin on that on weekdays, but not necessarily on Shabbos. He needs the Mishnah. I'll call Tzara Shaloi Tavei Al HaTzibur for any kind of Tzara that should not happen to the Tzibur. This is a euphemism, meaning any Tzara that does happen. Masriyin alein, you do Masriyin on them, you blow shofar, you say Anenu, you fast, whatever. Chutz mirov kshomim, except for when you have a lot of rain. Now, Rashi points out the important point over here, there's two different kinds of a lot of rain. There can be a lot of rain which is actually damaging the crops, like we talked about before in the case of the one city that's not getting rain and the other ones that are getting too much. That you are allowed to be Masriyin. We said before that the cities surrounding it, Masriyas v'lai Masanos, or Masanos v'lai Masriyas, according to the different opinions. Here we're talking about where there's too much rain. We don't mean it's not damaging the crops or anything. It's just a hassle for people. It's raining like the kind of a lot like when we get a lot of rain nowadays. It's not, you know, we don't have crops that it's damaging. It's, you know, maybe our basements are getting full of water, and maybe we need to buy a new pair of boots or whatever. But, you know, it's a hassle, it's an inconvenience, but it's not a disaster. So that you don't daven about. Maisa Shamru L'Choni Ma'agol, and here's a famous story. It once happened, they said to Choni Ma'agol, Spalal Shiyodu Kshomim, daven that rain should fall. And this, by the way, Megillah Tainis says that this happened on, this was on Chof Adar. So the winter was almost over, and no rain had fallen yet. But now they're finally going to Choni Ma'agol, daven that there should be rain. Amar Lahem, he says to the people, Tz'uvachnusu Tanuri Pesachim, go out and bring in your Pesach ovens, Vishkul Shalo Yimoyku, so that they don't dissolve. These ovens are made out of clay. they'd make them out of clay, then, and eventually they'd fire them. But during the weeks before Pesach, now it's Chof Adar, it's less than a month before Pesach, they're getting them ready to roast their Korban Pesach. Right? They haven't necessarily fired them yet. They're still raw, unfired clay. If you leave them out and it rains, they're gonna melt. They're gonna fall apart. So Chani Amagul is telling the people, I'm basically telling them, I'm certain that once I daven, it's gonna rain. So therefore, bringing your ovens inside so they don't get damaged. Well, he followed the Lidoduk Shamim. He davened and no rain fell. And the Rishami says, Taka Mephoshim quotes, that why Taka? Because he talked like a little bit of grace kite over there, like as if he's so certain that rain is going to fall just because he davened. Yeah, B'tachan, okay, but he should have still, there could have been a proper way of saying it. He should have said, bring in your ovens in case it's going to rain after I daven. Okay, that's true. This is all very good, but still, the onus was on him why he didn't get. So what did he do? He drew a circle in the ground and stood in the middle of it. And he says, Rebbeinu Shloim, Banecha Samu Pneim Alai, your children have put their faces towards me, Shani Kiben Bayis Banecha, because I'm like a member of your household. Therefore, Nishvani B'Shimcha Gadol, I'm swearing by your great name, She'eni Zoz Mikan, that I'm not going to move from here, Ad Shetirachem Abonecha, until you have Rachmanis on your children and send rain. And that's this is the standard explanation why he's called Chani Amagel, is because he made this eagle, he made this circle. And having said that, there are other explanations why he's called Chani Amagel. One of them is he's named after the place, where he's named after the town that he came from.
Could have died.
What do you mean, could have died?
The rain had not come down, couldn't climb the circle.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Eventually, I don't know. So they would have brought. Why would you have died? Eventually, they would have brought him. They could have brought him food inside the circle. You know.
What about testing Hashem?
Since he's confident that Hashem is going to answer his tefillos, then he's able to do this, I guess. There was an interesting explanation that I saw. Why Dafka is he drawing a circle around himself? Why not any other figure? Why is he saying, I'm not going to step out of the circle? Because he wants to represent with that the idea that right now the Eibishter is acting like the Jewish people are under the control of the mazalos, which surround us in a circle in the sky. I want that we should be beyond that. I want that you should be taking it, you, Eibishter, should be taking care of your children directly. So therefore, until you actually send rain and show that you're treating them l'mayla m'derech hateva, I'm going to stay inside the circle where right now apparently you have the Jewish people within the circle of the mazalot.
That's what I need for myself. Thank
you. So his chiluk shamim menachvin. So rain started dripping a little bit. Omar, he says, loikach shalti. That's not the kind of rain I'm asking for. Elegishme bodas shichin amiris. I mean the kind of rain that will fill up the pits and the wells and the cisterns. The rain started falling with tremendous force in a way that's very destructive. Omar, he says, Loikach Sha'alti, that's not the kind of rain I asked for either. Elegishme Rotzen, Bracha Nadava, I want rain that shows that the Eibishter is favorable, that the Bracha, that's going to be a generous thing. Yodukatiknon, so the rain started coming down normally, and it kept on raining. Until people had to leave Yerushalayim, meaning Yerushalayim mostly is built on the slope, in those days it was mostly built on the slope going down from the Harabayas. So it's a low-lying area. Their houses are starting to get flooded. So they left those parts of Yerushalayim and came to the Harabayas because of the rain. The Harabayas is first of all high up, and second of all, parts of the Harabayas, or maybe even all of the Harabayas, was covered with was covered. We learned in Pesachim, we learned in Sukkah, was covered with benches with roofs over them, rows of benches with roofs over them. So therefore, they went over there to seek shelter from the rain. No, we're finishing at 9:40. So the people came and told him, Kashem Shispalata Alem Shiyodu, just like you daven for the rain to come, Kachis Balal Shayokhala, and so also daven that the rain should go away. Amalahem, he tells them, Tsu'ur Uim Nimchas Eben Atoyin. Go see whether the Eben Atoyin has been Nimcha. Now, what's Eben Atoyin? Eben Atoyin, Rashi explains over here based on a Gemara and Bava Metzia, this was a famous landmark in Yerushalayim. It was a big stone where if somebody lost, it was Yerushalayim's lost and found. If you lost something, you'd go there to announce it. If you found something, you'd go there to announce it. And that way people would meet up over there. It was a known landmark. But it was a big stone. So he's saying to them, go see if it's been nimcha. Now what's nimcha? One possibility is it means if it's covered with water, which if a big rock like that is covered with water, then yeah, there's too much rain, and it makes sense to daven for it to go away. Otherwise, not. The second explanation, based on Yerushalmi, is nimches means literally wiped out, like washed away, like dissolved. And he's saying to them, not a big rock like that is never going to get dissolved by the rain. So he means just like it's impossible for the Evan HaToyin to get washed away, to get dissolved by the rain, so it's impossible to daven for the rain to stop. That's the bracha. Although the Gemara says in the end he did end up davening for it. Sholach lo Shimon ben Shatach. Shimon ben Shatach. What? Yeah. Yeah, the Gemara on Daf Chav Gimel is going to have more details of the story. Sholach lo Shimon ben Shatach. Shimon ben Shatach, who was the Nasi of that time, sent Choni Amagol a message. Il mole Choni atle, if you were not this important person, Choni, gezrani alacha nidui. I would have made a gzera of nidui against you. Nidui is a form of chedem. Because one of the reasons why a person can be put in nidui is for kvoda rav, for disrespecting his rebbe. How much more so for disrespecting the Eivishter? The way you talk to the Eivishter, it's not for kavod. Avol ma'asalach. But after all, what can I do about you? Shata mischata lifnei amakim, that you are mischate in front of Hashem. Rashi over here translates. So Rashi over here translates mischate by a French word that means basically to misbehave. Like you misbehave before Hashem, but yet He does what you want. In different other places, there's different other explanations, Rashi in Menachos.
Yeah, I want to ask you something.
Okay, but still, Shimon Shatach felt he should have talked more respectfully to Hashem. So, Rashi in Menachos gives a different, where it mentions the word Meschate, gives a different explanation, that it means basically like dance, it means basically like dancing or playing around in front of Hashem. The Rambam explains it, that it means Misgageya, like you show how much you, like you show, like you're you show like Kaviyachol, like a little kid, how much you miss Hashem, whatever it is. And then he does whatever you want for you. Just like a child acts that way towards his father. And then the father does whatever the kid wants. So therefore, I can't put you in nidu. You did talk chutz v'dik to the Eivishter, but okay, obviously the Eivishter tolerates it, just like a father tolerates his little kid acting up. It's about you. That's about somebody like you. The pasuk says, your father and mother should be happy. And the one who gave birth to you should be joyous that they have a kid, that they have a son who's such a great person.
That included in the mother, father and mother, and also.
And also Yeletecha, it's a good question. But Pashtus, you could answer that not necessarily. You could have, for example, like Abaya, where you know there's you know he has a mother and then he has a foster mother. Maybe Chonei Amagel will have had that, I don't know. Continues the Mishnah, the reason why it's a Machnissin over here is a printer's mistake. Evidently the printer forgot that all this time we've been in the Mishnayos. Anyway, Hayim Mitzanin, this is another one of those cases where they have all the Mishnayos of the Perek all together, I don't know why. Hayim Mitzanin, if the people were fasting because rain hadn't fallen, and rain fell before sunrise, lo yashlimu, then they don't have to finish the fast. But if the rain falls after sunrise, yeshlimu, then they still have to finish the fast. I agree with the basic idea, but the deadline is later. If the rain fell before chatzos, they don't have to finish the fast. But if it's after chatzos, then they do have to. What's the difference? The Tanakhama, one reason is, the Tanakhama is saying before and after Netzachama, because Netzachama in those days, people who went to work would eat at that time. So if it hasn't even come on Netzachama yet, you haven't really started the fast yet, then fine. There's no reason to continue it. But if you already had to miss your meal because of it, it means you already started the fast, then you should already finish it up. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer takes the view on the contrary. We find, the Gemara mentions in Pesachim, for example, that Tamid HaChamim would eat during the sixth hour of the day, meaning by Tamid HaChamim would eat their first meal of the day close to Chatzos. Regular people would eat their breakfast earlier in the morning, but they would eat their main meal of the day around noontime. So therefore, there's logic to say, therefore, that until you reach that point, the fast hasn't really gotten underway yet. There's another reason, based on Yerushalmi, that says that once you reach Chatzos already, half the day has already passed in the Kedusha of a fast, you ought to finish it up that way.
You have to eat the fast only during the day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about during the day, yeah. But no, but even if they start at night, still, I mean, most people would eat their meal around, you know, would eat their meal around Shkia or around Tzeitz or whatever. Maybe say, you know, Mishal Shakan Nichnasim Lachol B'Trumasan. And you know, and then that's it. They eat breakfast the next morning.
They started fasting when in Amud Shachar.
So it doesn't matter really whether they started fasting the night before, like in the later fast, or whether they started at Amud Shachar. Either way.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. Ma'aseh shegazru tainus b'lud. One time it happened that they declared a fast in Lud. V'yodu lehem k'shamu k'rayim chatzos, and rain fell before chatzos. Amar lehem Reb Tarfon. So Reb Tarfon tells the people, go out, eat, drink, make a yomtiv. So we see from that that chatzos is indeed the deadline. They did that. They went and ate and drank and made a yomtiv. And then they got back together in shul in the afternoon. And they read how they said halalagadol, which is the halal that we say Shabbos morning davening. That whole kapitel over there. Why we'll talk about in the Gemara, because that kapitel talks about noisim lechem lechobasa, that Hashem gives food to everybody, and therefore it's an appropriate thing to say when there's been rain after a drought. Just before I dressed by one, actually, yeah.
Didn't they relieve somewhere that if a person, I don't know if it was the time, he accepted the tainis and then he was answered, she has to finish the tainis.
So before we talk about, different Rishonim talk about the difference between that and this. There's a few different possibilities. The Ravid says the difference is when it comes to you davening for rain, there was no rain, now rain fell, that's it. You know, you've been saved. There's no way that it's going to go back to what it was before. That's it. You have rain now, so now the drought is over. Mashenkin, let's say, for example, you're fasting as a sick person. Okay, so he got better. He could still get sick again. You should have to finish the fast on that ground alone. That's one reasoning. Other Rishonim talk about the difference. There's a difference between a tainus yachid and a tainus tzibur. A yachid, go ahead and finish the fast. At tzibur, we're not going to be matriach them to finish the whole thing if rain fell. There's also... Yeah, there's also the idea, since we're saying over here that when it comes to a fast for rain, that at the end of it, afterwards, after they eat and drink, they say halala gadol, and the Gemara is going to explain, you can only say halala gadol when you're on a full stomach, so then in that, a yachid doesn't say halala gadol when his Torah is over. So therefore, you may as well finish the fast. The tzibur, you want them to be able to say halala gadol, well, that means they have to be able to eat. No, I don't know if that applies when we say it in Shabbos morning, Shachar, because that's just part of the Seder of davening. Here you're saying it as a special shvach to Hashem. That's what we're talking about. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean, Seder Tanias Ha'elo Ha'omabri Revi'a Rishonah? What do you mean? The Mishnah is starting to say that this Seder fast is by the Revi'a Rishonah, is by the first rainfall. Or Mini, I have a contradiction. A Braita says Revi'a Rishonah or Shnei Lishol. When we said in the first parak, what's the definition when the first and second rainfalls of the year usually fall, different dates in Cheshvin, you have three different opinions of Tanayim. Those are when you start asking for rain, when you start saying the same Talamata. Shlishas Lisanis, only if the third one came and went and there's no rain, do you start fasting. So our Mishnah should have said, Revi'a Shlishas. What the Mishnah means is like this. Seder Tanias Ha'omer Emesai. When is this order of fast that we said in the first and second parak? When did it apply? Bizman Shid Yotze Revi'a Rishonu Rishni or Shlishis. When the first and second and third Revi'a all passed, the Yodu Shaman and rain hasn't fallen yet. In other words, when the Mishnah says Revi'a Rishonu, it doesn't just mean only the first Revi'a. It means that whole series. That whole series of the early rains that are in Cheshvin, which are all part of the Yodah. But if rain fell the first time, and they planted grain and it didn't grow properly, or it started growing and then it changed, according to the different possibilities that Rashi said in the Mishnah, what it means that it changed, that there's thorns instead of weeds, or that it grew empty kernels or whatever, then Masriin Alein Miyad. That's when the Mishnah is saying that you right away start the Masriin, you right away turn the dial up to 11 and right away start with the most serious fact. Amar of Nachman, Davka Nishtanu, when the Mishnah is saying that you do this Masriyan immediately when their plants change, when they're not growing the normal way, that is Davka if they changed. But if they dried up, then no. Now why not? Rashi says because if they dried up while they're still in the stalks, that's it. It's Fafalan, it's goner. You're not gonna fast and daven at that point because it would be a tefillah shav. It would be an unnecessary tefillah because it's gone. You know, there's no. Obviously, the Eibishter can do a nest, but you're not going to daven for a nest. Well, of course, the Mishnah had said they changed. Didn't say anything about them drying up. Then so it's loy tzricha de akun. Right, but what Rav Nachman needs to tell us is that it is the case when after they dried, but then they still, the stalks continued growing a little bit. Akun meloshen kone, which means the stalk. So, mao detema akanta milsi. So you might think, okay, well, the stalks are growing again. That means, evidently, they seem to be reviving. They seem to be coming back to normal. Maybe at that point we should continue davening and fasting and whatnot, that they should continue reviving and then continue growing. Kamash Malan. Therefore, the chiddush is that Rav Nachman is saying that no, that little bit of extra growth is not really anything significant. The kernels are dried up. They're goner. Give up on them at this point. That's Rashi's first explanation. Second explanation is, on the contrary, if the plants are drying out, you don't have to fast, because for them to dry out is a fairly normal thing. They will revive it. They will revive afterwards. They will normally revive afterwards. You don't need special fasts and fillers and whatever for them to revive if they started drying out. It's a reasonably normal thing. And then we're saying that again, you would think that even they're starting to grow up on the stalks already. Maybe if they're growing on the stalks and then already drying, maybe that's it. Maybe it's a serious thing. No, it's nothing. It's still nothing serious. They'll keep on growing. You can expect that they'll revive from they had a temporary drought, they had a temporary lack of water. They'll revive. They'll continue growing. You don't need special fasts and things for that. A couple of other different mafarshim of what akun means over here. One is that they became stronger. They started becoming Rabbi Chananel brings two explanations. One is that akun means they became green again, and the other one is that they became stronger. Either way, the point is that becoming green or that strengthening is just a temporary thing. You don't blow shofar and whatever on them because that's it, the situation is normal again, or because fakert, you know, even though temporarily they turned green or temporarily they became a little stronger, but they're still goners, they're still fafalim anyway. Then the Mishnah continued, v'chein shepasku b'shamim ben geshem l'geshem chulo, that suppose if you have a 40-day break between one rainfall and another, then we said right away you start fast with terua. And the Mishnah said, because the makas batzoris, because the plague of drought. So my makas batzoris, and what do we mean by that? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, makah hamavia l'day batzoris. It means it's a plague which is going to lead to a drought. Because right now, okay, people are still living off the food that they had from before. It's not like right away there's a famine. But it's going to lead to it, because if you have that long between one rain and the next, the plants are going to dry out, and then they're going to be gone.
Okay, so it was enough rain to last the whole time in between. Or would you say that the plants absorbed everything?
You would say the plants absorbed everything after 40 days already. They need more rain. Amar Rav Nachman, here's some definitions. Rav Nachman says, Nara anara b'sarta. If you have the places on one river don't have food, but if it's all on the same river, if you have one city along a river that doesn't have food, but other cities along the river do, that's b'sarta. That's considered a b'sarta. That's not a real full-fledged famine. It's just a drought. Because sort of like we said in the Mishnah, you know, they'll be able to supply. They'll be able to bring food on ships from one city to the other. So it's serious, but it's not so serious. You know, we have in Pirkei Avos, this coming Shabbos, there's a distinction like that. And it talks about that you have for certain Averis, Rav Shabbat Sor, Rav Shomahum Abba, then you have, you have Rav Shomahum Abba, you have certain kinds of things that a famine of confusion comes, Mitzatzim Ravim, Mitzatzim Sveim, some people are hungry, some people are full, that's the kind of Batsoris that we're talking about over here. Then you have Rav Shabbat Soros, which is the next serious thing. It's a drought that affects the whole area. And then you have Rav Shokloya, then you have a really destructive famine. So here also we're talking about in the Gemara a similar kind of progression like that. So if you have that one city on the river is suffering from a lack of food, but the other cities on that river have food, it's not so serious yet. You're not to the point where you're not necessarily to the point where you need to make Tanasim with Truets and everything. Exactly. But Medinta, Medinta. But if you have the whole, if you have the whole Medina, the whole country is suffering from a drought, and therefore they have to import food from another country, that would be kafna. That would be a real honest to goodness famine, which is more serious. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi has another explanation that nara is, we're not talking about food, we're talking about where if one river dries up, and therefore now you have to divert another river into it to bring water to the people of the city. It's a batzoras, it's a problem, but it's not an insurmountable problem. But if you have Medinta, if all the rivers in this area have dried up, and now they have to go bring water from elsewhere, that's a serious thing, that's kafna. That's a serious. Kafna is Aramaic word for famine.
Yeah, but
oh, I don't know what root it comes from. Kafan is just it's Aramaic word for hunger. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo shanu ela bizman shamois bezol peiros beyoker. All this is only talking about when money is cheap, meaning people have money. The economy is still going. People have jobs, and just a peiros beyoker, just food is more expensive. But if it's the other way around, that money is expensive, that nobody has any money because let's say nobody has jobs or whatever, or peres bezor, even though produce is cheap, that also you right away blow shofar and declare the most serious fast for it. Right away. I remember when you could buy 4 sa'ah of grain for a sella, which was the normal price in those days. And yet, there were a lot of people who were swollen with hunger in Tveria, which is where Rabbi Yochanan grew up. Midlest Isser, because they had no Isser, they had no money. So food is plentiful, but nobody had any money to buy it with. So therefore, you see that if people don't have money, then that itself is a serious situation.
Is there like a qualification of what that means?
No, not necessarily. It's just you go according to how it looks. Are people able to afford to buy food or not? In other words, to give an example closer to our times. For example, you think about the Depression. For example, during the Great Depression, in many places in the country, there was plenty of food. Nobody had any money. That's the kind of thing Rabbi Yochanan is talking about. Okay, but I guess there's only so much to go around, you know.
Also
true, yeah.
Also, related to now, from what I'm hearing, a lot more people are struggling just to get the food on their table.
That's a different thing, though. That's more a matter of inflation. That's more a matter of the food costs more than it used to.
True.
That's not what we're talking about. Rabbi Yochanan is talking about it here. Food was at the normal price. Actually, the Mordechai someplace, I think in Baba Basra, where this Gemara is also brought, the Mordechai has a girsa that you could buy 40 star for a seller. I think he made a bracha before already. The Mordechai seems to have a girsa that you could buy 40 sah for a seller. In other words, that the food was 1/10 the normal price it is, but still nobody could afford it. Mishnah said yodel atzmachan avloila ilan. The Mishnah had mentioned three possibilities where you had rain that was good for the plants but not for the trees, for the trees but not for the plants, and for both of them but not good to fill up the water hole. I understand how you can have rain that's good for the plants but not for the trees. You can have a case. The rain is falling gently, not heavily, so it doesn't penetrate into the ground deeply enough to get to the roots of the trees. You can have rain that's good for the trees but not for the plants. It's the other way around. There's a heavy rain but not a gentle rain, so it goes deep into the ground. It goes deep to get to the roots of the trees, but it goes through the shallower layers of the soil, but like it goes right through and goes deep. And meanwhile, the shallower rooted plants like the wheat and barley and whatnot don't really get a lot of it. And also sometimes also maybe it's washing them away. But what would be a case where there was rain that was good for the plants and good for the trees, but not enough for the cisterns? That would be, no, mashkachas lo, you can have a case. There was a heavy rain, there was a light rain, so both layers of the soil have been wetted properly. Miyutuba, la'afti, but he didn't have a lot of rain, so not enough to fill up the water holes. Ella, so far so good. The problem is like this. Ella had the Tanya, but what about this that we learn in the Braisa? Yodul aburis l'shichin v'lam al-aris ha'b'loy l'zevel l'zeh. What if you have, the Braisa says, that you had rain fell that's suitable for the cisterns and the water holes and whatnot, but not for the trees and not for the plants. Heichemashkachas law, what kind of a case would that be? The answer is, da'afti b'shvichusa. You would have a case where the rain came pouring down. It's no good for the plants or the trees. It washes them away. But it's good for the cisterns. It fills them right up. Like that second rain of Choni HaMagels is a thing like that. Rashi has a second explanation that Shvichusa means that you have, it's a light rain, but it lasts a long time. So therefore, it's a light rain. It's not good enough for the trees because it doesn't penetrate the ground deeply enough. It would be good for the plants, except that there's so much of it that it ends up washing them away. But because there was a lot of it, it lasted for days or whatever, then it ends up filling up the water holes. So in all those cases, we're saying that you blow shofar and you fast and you daven for
it. Impossible.
Sure you could. You could have a light rain and a heavy rain, and you have it last for a proper amount of time, enough to be able to fill up the water hole.
One of the cracks. After all the rain comes, in other words, after the light and the rain and the heavy, and then they realize it's a problem, or
maybe
the light.
Yeah.
During the light.
Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Masriya Nal Ilonis Bepreisa Pesach, they daven and they fast about the trees Bepreisa Pesach during the time before Pesach. The Preis of Yom Tov usually means, we've had this before, it means 15 days before the Yom Tov, so like around Rosh Chodesh Nissan. That would usually be when the kind of rain falls, that would be usually when the trees are blossoming and giving fruit. So that would be the time, if you see that rain is not falling properly for the trees, that would be when you daven for it, when you fast and daven for it. And Alabodas, Veshichin, Amiris, as far as when the cisterns and water holes and whatnot are empty, you would do that even Afilu Bepreisachag, during the time right before Sukkot. You wouldn't do it during the summer necessarily, because you don't expect rain is not supposed to fall in Eretz Yisrael or Bavel or whatever during the summer. But come shortly before Sukkot, comes around Rosh Hashanah time, actually the Shagas Aliyah says a day, but it says Erev Rosh Hashanah, that's already the earliest possible time the rainy season could ever begin in Eretz Yisrael, so that already it's an appropriate time. If the water holes are empty, that's an appropriate time to be fasting and davening that the Eretz should send rain to fill them up.
What's the fuel before Sukkot?
15 days before Sukkot. Actually, that's what I'm saying. The Shagas Aliyah in Gurus Ari says that actually it means 15 days before Erev Sukkot. Because if it was 15 days before Sukkot, it would be on Rosh Hashanah. You're not going to fast and daven on. You're not going to fast for the stuff on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is Yom Tov. It means Erev Yom Tov. It means Erev Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
But you have to, because you need for the cisterns. You need for the water holes. And in all these cases, if they don't have water to drink, then immediately you daven for them. Even during the summer, there's two possible cases. There can be people who have water to drink, but they don't have water in their cisterns and whatnot, so they don't have extra water available to water their crops and to water their animals and whatnot, but they themselves have enough water to drink. If they themselves have run out of water to drink, even if it's in the middle of the summer, you can daven for it, because people need water. What does it mean that you cry out for them miyad? It means sheni, v'chamishi v'sheni. It means you start fasting on Monday, Thursday, Monday. All these things, you only fast and then cry out for them only in that particular kingdom. Hifrachi means like a kingdom or an area that's ruled over by the same prince or what have you. If you have in whatever country they've run out of water or the water holes are empty or whatever, is the one they fast in, not in the neighbor one, so you're not easily going to bring water from one country to another, from one kingdom to another. But Askara, what about if there's a plague of Askara going on? Rashi says that Askara is, Rashi translates it by a French word. Yeah, we had it in Brachas, for example, we had it in a couple of places. Rashi translates it by a French word that means a swelling in the throat. It interferes with a person breathing. Some people translate it as diphtheria, which is a disease that closes up a person's throat so they can't breathe. whatever it is, Bizman Shiyesh Bamisa, if there's death involved, if people are dying of Askara, Masriyan Allah, then you cry out for it. Bizman Shain Bamisa, but if there's no Misa, if it's just that people are having sore throats basically, but it's not actually killing them, in Masriyan Allah, then you don't go, you may fast for it, but you don't go to the extent of Masriyan. Or Masriyan Allah Goivai Bechol Shehu, you do Masriyan for Goivai, for any amount, even the smallest amount, because Goivai is one of those kinds of grasshoppers we talked about in Amud Aleph, we had Arba and Chosil. Goivai is another one of those kinds that eats up everything. So even if you only have a tiny bit of it, one Goivai can eat a lot. Rav Shimon Elazar, Ma'afal Chogav. Rav Shimon Gamliel says the same rule, Rav Shimon Elazar rather says the same thing applies to Chogav, which is another kind of locust. And then Shulchan Aruch says nowadays we don't really know the different kinds of locusts, which is why we don't eat them, even though technically some of them are kosher. So in principle, then we would cry out and daven and then do fast or whatever for any kind of locust infestation. We learn in a brayso. Masrin alei lonis b'shar shnei shavua. We fast and then cry out because of the trees during the 6 days, during any of the other 6 years of the Shemitah cycle. If you don't have enough rain for the trees, in other words, if the trees are not growing properly, but not during Shemitah because they're hefker. But about the water holes and cisterns and pits, that you cry out even during Shemitah, because people need water then also.
What about the trees then? If they die in 1 year, because they don't get the water that they need, then would they not be around the next
year? No, because you'll plant new ones next year. It's not that big a deal. Besides, not necessarily are the trees going to die from 1 year without water. It's just they won't grow fruit. But okay, big deal. During Shemitah, you're not relying on that fruit anyway. You're mostly living off what you stored up in the 6th year.
Bring up the water, even though the water is good for these plants.
Yeah, because it's more than just for the plants. You also need it in order to drink. Yeah. Rav Shimon Gamliel, I'm afraid a lot of Masriyan. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, you do cry out also even during Shemitah about the trees, because the poor people do depend on the fruit from the trees to live off during Shemitah. They don't have stored up stuff. And the Braitha continues. I skipped a couple of lines. Rav Shimon Gamliel, I'm afraid a lot of Masriyan. Rav Neshiyeshben, Parnosal Anim, because there's food for that name on those trees. Tanya Idach, we learn in a different writer. Masriyan alei lonis b'shar shnei shavua. We cry out and fast over the trees on the other six years of Shemitah. Ala bordes v'ala shichin v'ala maris afidu b'shvius. And again, we about the cisterns and the water pits and the water holes and the caves even in Shemitah. Reb Shimon Gamliel ma'afay alei lonis masriyan. Also for the trees we cry out for the same reason he said before. And also ala svichin b'shvius. We also cry out during Shemitah if the svichim, the aftergrowth, the stuff that grows now, the stuff that grows on its own from seeds that were dropped the year before or whatever, you also daven for them during Shemitah. But again, because again, the poor people are depending on them. Now, it is true, actually, that midrabbanan, and according to Rabbi Akiva, actually midaraisa, you're not allowed to eat tzvichim that grow during Shemitah. Rabbi Akiva learns it from a pasuk. Everybody else says it's midrabbanan. It was because there were people who were illegally planting during Shemitah and claiming that it grew on its own. Nevertheless, though, the Mishnah in Shavuos does mention there's certain kinds of crops that people don't normally plant. So those are the kind you're allowed to eat the svichim of during Shemitah, according to everybody. Those are the kind of svichim that we would be talking about over here, that if they're not growing properly, you would... Yeah.
But not the regular ones.
Not wheat or whatever, yeah. Tanya, we learn it right. So Amar Abelazim and Pauta, miyom shecharav beis hamikdash, since the beis hamikdash was destroyed, nasuk shamim tzimukim la'olam. The rain has become tzimukim for the world. Now, tzimukim, Rashi says, is meloshen tzimukim, like shriveled up. Like rain is not given as generously as it used to be. And so it's like the bekoshi, Rashi says, like with difficulty. Sort of. It's simuk. It's a different church, but yeah. What? Simukim is raisins, yeah, because they're shriveled up. The aruch has a different girsa. The aruch's girsa is that the word is not simukin, but skimmy yarn or simuki yarn or something like that, which he explains is related to the word scheme. It's related to the English word, which comes from Greek, scheme, which means that the Eivishter uses the rain comes as a direct consequence of how we're acting, as opposed to during the time of the Beis Hamikdash. You didn't need that. You had, for example, the red string that we talked about in Yoma, that different other simonim that the Eivishter could use to show whether he's pleased with us or not after the Churban. We don't have those things, so therefore the rain becomes that simon. Namely, yes, shana shik shamam rubin. You have some years when you have a lot of rain. Yes, shana shik shamam often. Then you have years where there's a little rain. Yes, shana shik shamam yodin bizmanon. You have years when the rain falls in the proper time. Yes, shana shen gishmam yodin bizmanon. Then you have years when the rain does not fall in its proper time. So, shana shik shamam yodin bizmanon, lamor daima. What is it like when you have a year when the rain falls in the proper time? It's like le'evet shenosin le'rabi parnasasa be'acham b'shabbat. It's like a slave whose master gives him his needs, his food, on Sunday. So he has a whole week to prepare it for Shabbos. Nimtzis isa nefes ketikna v'nechelas ketikna. So therefore he's able to prepare his dough properly and eat it properly. He's able to bake it, and he's able to prepare it and then bake it in good time for Shabbos and then be able to eat nicely on Shabbos. Shana she'en k'shemeh yodin bizmanen, but when you have a year when the rain doesn't fall in the proper time, l'mar d'ayma, what is it like? L'evet she'nosim le'rabi panasasa be'erev Shabbos. It's like a slave whose master gives him his panasasa, his weekly stipend, on erev Shabbos. Nimtzis isa nefes shalei ketikna, so that the dough ends up being made improperly. He's in a hurry to get it together, so it's not really made well. V'nechel shalei ketikna, and it's eaten improperly because like you just barely managed to get it in the oven before Shabbos. And so, yeah, so you're eating half-baked bread. Another way of looking at it, a year that has a lot of rain, what is it like? It's like a slave whose master gave him his stipend all at one time. Let's say he gives him wheat. Nimtzu, then he gains like this. It comes out then when you're grinding up the wheat on the millstone, inevitably when you grind wheat, Some of it sticks to the millstones or gets blown away or whatever. But you have it's the same amount regardless of how much you're grinding. If you're grinding a little bit, if you're grinding it in small quantities at a time, each time you're losing out some of it because it gets stuck to the millstones or whatever. Whereas if you're grinding a whole large quantity at a time, you're only losing out proportionally a tiny little bit. So that's what it's like. Nimtzu rechayim teuchnes min akor mashu teuchnes min akav. It comes out then that the millstones end up eating up when you would grind a kur in it. All you lose is the same amount as you would lose if you were grinding a calf, which is one 180th of a kur. You're losing proportionally a much smaller amount. Same thing when it comes to kneading the dough. Inevitably, some of the dough sticks to the tray, or the bowl or whatever that you're kneading it in. Same idea, though. Whether you're kneading a little or a lot, about the same amount sticks to the bowl. If you're doing a lot together, you're losing a very small amount, as opposed to if you were doing it in tiny little batches, each batch you would be losing some. Yeah. On the other hand, shana shagashmeh mu'atin mo'ad daima, when you have a year with very little rain, what is it like? It's like a slave whose master gives him his stipend, gives him his food only a little at a time. So then he has a problem. So whatever he loses on the millstones, whatever he would lose from a kur, like this, he's losing out individually from each calf. So he ends up losing much more. Same, and when it comes to kneading the dough, again, each time he has this tiny little bit to do, so each time some of it sticks to the bowl, at the end, he's lost a large amount compared to if he had been able to do it all at once. Dover acha, another explanation, when you have a lot of rain, what is it like? Well, other shem gabalas atit. It's like a person who's kneading clay to make clay for earthenware or bricks or what have you. Im yeshle mayim rabim, if you have plenty of water, mayim enim kolim, you don't use up the water, the water doesn't get absorbed into the clay that quickly. Vatit megubo yofa, and then you're able to do it properly, and there's a clay that's kneaded properly. Im yeshle mayim watin, but if you only have a little bit of rain, mayim kolim, and the rain, the water gets used up very quickly. Vatit enim esgabo yofa, and the clay doesn't get kneaded properly, because when you put in a little water, and then by the time you get the next little bit of water, the first bit of water has dried up, and already you haven't started all over again. One of the Mefarshim says that we have corresponding to this in the Brachas in Parshas V'chukosai. The Torah says over there that when the Jewish people are acting properly, it says when Asati Yishmechem Beitam, I'll give you rain in the proper time. And then the Torah continues with three good things, which correspond to the three things that the Gemara is mentioning over here. Number one, V'nasna Aretz Yivul of Eitz Asadi Yitzim Period. The earth will have its full strength, just like over here. This last thing we're saying about being able to knead the clay properly, it'll have its full strength to give out as much crops and fruit and whatnot as it's able to. Number two, that you'll have all like in the second case, all your food will be together, all your crops will be harvested around the same time instead of a little bit at a time. And number three, ba'achatam lachmacham l'seva, you'll be able to eat it comfortably, like in the first analogy over there where we had the guy is able to hear his bread on Sunday and he's able to get it done nicely for Shabbos. Well, anyway, we're anyway at a stopping point. We have tomorrow the story of Nachum and Ben Gurion and the 12 wells.
Yeah.